is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. We are still working remotely, believe it or not, but through the magic of Zoom, I have the great opportunity to interview Carmela Padilla. Hello, Carmela.
Hi, Debbie.
Great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited about everything that I hear that you've been doing. And I'm looking at my piece of paper, but I don't think I have your title correct. Can you tell me what your title is?
Yeah, I'm the Program Coordinator for CalFresh Healthy Living, UCCE, and the Central Sierra. So that covers El Dorado, Amador, Calaveras, and Tuolumne counties.
So what exactly is CalFresh Healthy Living?
Yeah, so CalFresh Healthy Living, UCCE, we're in many nonprofits, we're in many schools. The ones that qualify for CalFresh, so that's where the CalFresh portion comes in, and we provide direct services and indirect services, and then we help with any healthy systems changes that we can.
Oh, good, good. Now, when you say services or direct services, indirect services, what does that mean? What kind of services are those?
Yeah, so an example of direct services for schools is that we can go in to schools and teach nutrition, physical activity, or garden enhanced nutrition education. And we're working directly with students and teachers to facilitate those lessons. And an example of indirect education is we can help maintaining garden spaces. So, I mean, there's a lot that we can do with either of the services, but those are just two primary examples that we support.
Oh, good, good. So, Carmela, I have to ask you this, because everybody going to school, sometimes you go, oh, I don't want to learn anything new, but are these lessons fun? Are any of them fun?
Yes, they're a lot of fun. We try to have like physical activity breaks in them, so we're always getting up and moving. They're not just listening to us, they're very hands-on, learner-centered lessons.
Okay, and then you also provide, or you used to provide tastings sometime, coordinated?
Yeah.
How did that work?
Yeah, so typically how the lessons work for direct education is we would do one of those hands-on learner-centered lessons, and then we'd be able to provide a tasting that coincides with my plate. So a food group tasting, a fruit, vegetable, protein, grain, or dairy. And hopefully it might be something new for students to try or something for a second time, but typically we try to include some type of tasting so the students can try something in the lesson.
Okay, so what do these tastings look like? I mean, what kind of foods are they?
Yeah, so it could be anything depending on the season and what grade level they are in. So typically for the younger grades, it's probably like a fruit slice with some yogurt would be a very simple one, or just a vegetable slice. But with the older grades, we try to have them involved in the cooking process too, since they're a little bit older and they can use some of the equipment. So they could slice up a recipe or cook a recipe with us. So that can be soups, salads, wraps. They can bake stuff too, depending on the school site that we're serving. So it's really a vast range of different recipes that we offer.
How fun. Now, just kind of curious, why is it so important to do this for the kids? Because, you know, kids going to school, they have so much they already have to learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so for me, I think that at the heart of it is the overall well-being of a student, and that definitely encompasses nutrition. So how they're feeling is directly related to what foods they're able to eat. And then how they do throughout the day depends on the foods they eat, their physical activity levels they're able to do throughout the day too. So that affects your energy levels, your overall mood. So that's where nutrition ties into the core of school lessons.
Right, right. Now, school gardens, are there quite a few school gardens throughout the Central Sierra, throughout the four counties?
Yeah, I would say it looks a little bit different in each of the counties, but there is at least one school garden in each of the Central Sierra counties, yeah.
Okay, and why is it, I mean, I'm just doing the devil's advocate, why is it important to have a school garden?
Yeah, so school gardens are an amazing connection where students are able to see and be a part of the experience of their food growing. So often one of our nutrition lessons actually is tracing back where your food comes from, a whole meal. And then they see that it comes from this seed that was planted at this farm or in their garden space or at their home. So it's really cool to see that connection when they realize all of the items from their meal came from the garden or a farm.
Aww, that's really a lot of fun. That is. And at the school gardens, they grow tomatoes and cucumbers and squash and strawberries and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, definitely. All of those. And then also fruits, and, like you said, strawberries, squash, pumpkins, trying to think of other things I've
blueberries.
Seen.
Blueberries. How about blueberries?
Grapes. I've seen grapes.
Oh, yeah.
Flowers and other plants around the area, too. So
they right. Can, yeah. How fun. You know, when you're walking through a garden, at least this is my experience, food tastes so good the minute you pick it out of the garden. It just is so... It's just that pop of freshness. And I'm thinking of when I've eaten grapes right out of the garden. Oh my gosh, they're, you just can't buy it in a grocery store.
Yeah.
Or how about cherry tomatoes?
Oh, that's
those are fun.
Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show, Carmela, is that you have, with a lot of other nutrition educators, been producing these amazing videos about nutrition, but also our particular favorites are about gardening. So how did you guys decide to do this and why?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that come to mind with that question, but I feel like the main reason is just because of everything going on in the world with distance learning being at the forefront. So we wanted to be prepared, and we meaning all of CalFresh, so statewide, everyone is working on virtual learning opportunities that can be offered at a distance. So that's where this all stemmed from, is how can we bring what we've been doing throughout the school year, throughout our fiscal year, online, and it be equitable for everyone to have access to. So we started with these videos, and the first ones that we started with were our direct education videos. So they're a little bit longer, and they're actual nutrition lessons. So 20 minutes long, so not too long at the screen, but just long enough. And then from those, we branched into indirect education lessons, which involve the gardening ones that you were talking about, physical activity ones, virtual hiking, as well as cooking at home. So we tried to make those videos shorter in length so that students can just watch it really quickly and get some ideas or learn something new and hopefully be able to try it out if it was a physical activity one or cooking or have an idea of how to plant in their garden space. So I would say overall, the idea for this is from everyone moving to online.
Okay. So continue it is it a continuation of what you have already been doing and trying to make this an online experience for the students?
Yeah, so I would say that it looks very similar to what we've done in person. So that meaning we are able to lead lessons and then have them participate, students or are participants in some type of activity. But how it looks a little bit different is that some of the lessons are pre-recorded. So there's that piece, and then they would participate in the live lesson, whereas it used to be just all live sessions. So there's a little bit of differences. There's also, of course, no tasting with each of the lessons, which is unfortunate, but hopefully there's some ideas on how they can create something fun or new, innovative at home with the other videos that we've been able to create as well.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I thought was really exciting is with some of the videos, and maybe it's the indirect videos, that anybody can view them. So it's not because your direct videos, those are basically for the teachers, right?
Yeah, so the direct education videos, those ones are available to the CalFresh teachers that have been a part of the program or aren't a part of the program, but the indirect videos are listed on our YouTube channel as public, so they're available to the public.
Okay. And how do we find those videos? Are they at the Central Sierra website?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way to find the videos is just through YouTube, and in the search bar, if you search CalFresh Healthy Living, UCCE, Central Sierra, that should
Okay.
lead you to us.
So if you are on YouTube and you search, it was CalFresh Healthy Living. CalFresh, and I'm writing this down. Okay, and then what was the last? Central Sierra, right?
Yes, CalFresh Healthy Living at UCCE, Central Sierra.
And then a lot of times when I'm Googling, if I don't have it exactly right, it will still pop up.
Yeah.
What I mean, at least that's my experience. So you have your own YouTube channel. That's very exciting.
Yes, it is. And like I said, on the YouTube channel, there's the different playlists. So again, it's physical activity. There's a cooking playlist. There's the virtual hiking playlist, and then gardening.
How fun. And I've watched a couple of the gardening videos. Some of the videos are being taught by children,
Yes.
which is always fun.
Yeah.
They're so knowledgeable. They already know how to garden. We love
Yeah.
that. And then I think there was one and not taught by a child, but showing how to start seeds in egg cartons. What
Yeah.
a great idea. I don't know why after all these years I've never thought of that,
Yeah.
but just great information. But Carmela, you're not going to believe it. We did run out of time. So could we have you come back on the show sometime, give us an update and let us know what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe after this school year, once we see how everything goes with online learning.
Oh, that would be perfect. Well, thank you so much, Carmela. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Debbie. Bye.
Good morning. This is Linda Reevely from UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. And today I'm at the county office on South Washington Street, and I'm sitting here with Debbie Powell, the Director of Master Gardeners for Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. And we've been talking about climate change. And what got us onto this subject is, I understand you went to a conference recently, Debbie.
I did. I did. I was really fortunate. I went to the ninth annual, or actually, I should rephrase that, the ninth annual International Oak Conference that was held at Davis. Usually it's held in other parts of the world, but this time it was at Davis, and I was so lucky to be able to go.
That's fabulous. As many people know, and I'm sure you do now after going to the conference, oaks are the primary kind of trees world round, especially in the northern hemisphere, but to a certain extent in the southern hemisphere as well. And oak health is a real diagnostic for the general health of the environment. I bet you learned all kinds of interesting things.
It was pretty incredible. There, you would think that people would run out of information after 3 days, but it's endless. It's endless. There's so much information. There was a huge emphasis on climate change because, of course, our oaks are suffering from climate change. People are trying to figure out what to do, the experts throughout the world. And yes, you're right, oaks are considered indicator species.
That's absolutely fascinating. And what I really would like to talk about today is the place of our gardens within that larger environment and what we could do to make our gardens more resilient when it comes to climate change. I'm hoping that you will sit down with me and we can do an oak show in a little bit. But right now, let's talk about our gardens and climate change.
Sounds wonderful.
Great. I know that you and I, and almost everyone we know, are trying to make changes to make the environment better. Things like driving hybrid cars, or using reusable garbage or grocery bags for going to the store, or putting in energy-efficient light bulbs. I know we all are trying to do those little steps that we hope will make a difference. But not too many of those steps help us a lot in the garden, do they?
That's true.
Really?
It's primarily focused on the house and the way we live our life within the house.
It's true. And I think that our gardens are a really remarkable place that we can make a difference. And we can make a difference for a wider part of the environment than we can just within the walls of our own house.
Right. You're exactly right. It's our own little piece of the world.
So, and the other thing is, I think gardeners are on the right track. I think we are trying to enhance the environment of our gardens to make them the most productive and beautiful things we can have.
We're always trying.
We're always trying, sometimes more successfully than others. But as homeowners and you know, private people, I think we're making a big difference. And that's a good and wonderful thing to remember. And today I'd like to give you a few hints on things that we could do as gardeners to enhance that whole potential to improve our lives, the lives of our garden, and the environments of our communities.
Sounds wonderful.
Great. Let's start at the ground.
Okay.
As many people warn us and tell us, if you don't take care of the soil won't take care of you.
That's true. Very
and
true.
The first thing that we need to do is to get our soil in good shape, to make a healthy place for the plants that we want to have succeed to grow. And one of the things to consider is that if you're going to plant native plants, you need to look at the native soil where that plant came from.
Right, right.
There's a lovely plant called woolly blue curls. Are you familiar with it?
Not at all.
It's just a stunning native plant. It's bright blue flowers, and they're fuzzy, and they're just the cutest things. And many people around here try woolly blue curls over and over again and aren't successful. And I just happened to stumble on woolly blue curls and Stephanie Garcia at the same moment one day. And she said, oh, just plant them in gravel.
Oh.
And Nancy Pikarsik, another master gardener, seconded that motion, and so I did. And now I have beautiful woolly blue curls growing in my yard.
Oh my gosh.
And they aren't even supposed to do well here, and mine are doing fabulously well because they have what they want, which is a gravelly base to grow
in. That makes
and
sense.
So think about native plants and what they want, and then try to recreate those situations. But so many of the lovely plants we want to plant aren't natives.
That's true.
And for most of those, you want to think about making your soil richer and more prone to hold water rather than less. Many of our natives prefer less, but most of these imports that we think are so beautiful in our yard want a little bit more.
Sure.
And even things that grow in oak forests, for instance, like columbines, like a little bit moister environment. And so if you create soil that will hold that water and amend that soil properly, you will have better success.
Do you have a suggestion?
Compost.
Okay.
Compost, 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 exclamation point, lots of compost. Because the thicker and deeper your compost, the more successful most plants are. Certainly vegetable plants do better.
Oh, definitely.
In a rather dramatic way.
Oh, absolutely.
And a good many of our landscape plants mm-hmm. will do better if you can provide them rich composted soil, even just to get started in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can help maintain their health later, but if you start them with mm-hmm. a goodly amount of decent compost, you will have that water-holding, water-retentive soil that you so desire in your garden.
Now, do you make compost, Linda?
We do.
Okay.
All our kitchen garbage that's not animal-based is, okay. except for eggshells, are sort of ripped apart and thrown in compost bins. We have four of them, and we move our compost from one to the next as it gets more composted. And once or twice a year, my husband and I will build a substantial compost heap out of stuff that we've pulled out of our garden and things that we've pulled up from our yard that we no longer want in those locations.
Mm-hmm.
And we stack that up with animal manure, usually
right.
turkey, which
okay.
is readily available here from our local turkey farm.
Right.
And we build a hot pile. And that mm-hmm. usually takes about 2 weeks.
Wow.
And it will produce a significant amount of compost.
Wow, that's great.
I'm also fortunate enough to be allied with Dambacker Family Farms. Mm-hmm. And through the Dambackers, they produce compost commercially. Mm-hmm. And when I need compost, I can also get compost from them.
Okay.
And so I'm a fan.
Right.
I'm an absolute fan.
You've seen the difference.
I have.
You've
seen
it firsthand.
I have seen the light, and it's on the ground. It's just, compost is an amazing thing. Mulch is really important, and mm-hmm. mulch is a real interesting thing. I used to think mulch was all organic.
Okay.
That the best mulch in the world would be sort of like decomposing wood chips or something.
Right, right.
But I find out that the decomposing wood chips and a lot of the organic mulches are actually sucking up nitrogen rather than releasing it.
Mm-hmm.
In the process of their decomposition.
Right.
And I'm now beginning to believe that a lot of rock mulches mm-hmm. can be extremely useful in our environment.
Probably you're talking about for a permanent landscape.
For permanent landscape.
Maybe not a vegetable garden or anything
no.
like that.
I mulch my vegetable gardens almost entirely with straw.
Oh.
And I do that because it's easy to clean up and it will compost.
Right. Okay.
But for permanent landscaping, I'm beginning mm-hmm. to find that gravel, pea gravel,
okay.
some of those things, especially if the plant is going to overhang that mulch
right.
so that it keeps the rocks cool,
right.
seem to be extremely effective.
Oh, good. And it's fire safe.
Fire safe, water permeable.
Huge. Right.
It doesn't harbor large amounts of deleterious,
mm-hmm.
Actors,
yeah.
insects, et cetera, that we don't want. I'm finding that's really helpful. And I think you can make your own mulch out of wood and shredded leaves and
mm-hmm.
things. And if you are, for instance, live in a yard with a lot of oak trees that
mm-hmm.
we were discussing before, that's a great place to think about using those oak leaves as mulch because that's where they would naturally be.
Right.
Underneath
right.
that oak tree.
Right.
I just cringe when I see people raking away their oak leaves in the fall.
I know.
Your
I
oak
know.
Leaves should be underneath your oak trees where
right.
they create tilth.
Mm-hmm.
That soft, spongy area that's so rich with
right.
mycorrhiza,
mm-hmm.
the funguses that help our things, our plants and our environment to be healthy.
Right.
And oak leaves are wonderful. And they're not super acidic, as people might have you believe.
Right.
Their pH is essentially just as neutral as almost any other leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So oak leaves are a really great mulch. Don't
yeah. Yeah.
Don't
no,
get
I
me
love
wrong.
Em.
They're wonderful.
I love them.
They're the best. Another thing that you should really consider about the soil
mm-hmm.
is that we, for generations, have been telling everybody to dig up your garden, turn that soil over,
oh, right,
move it around.
Right.
And recent research
time.
Has been proving that the no-tilth
mm-hmm.
techniques are so much better and more important than the constant turning of the soil, which, strangely enough, actually incorporates oxygen and releases carbon dioxide from the soil, which is exactly the opposite of what we want to do.
Right, right. That's
so
true.
So from the environmental gases point
mm-hmm.
of view, leaving your soil in position
mm-hmm.
with the clods, with whatever faults you happen to see in it can probably in the long run be a whole lot better technique for managing it.
Right.
And this actually works in my garden beds as well, my vegetable garden beds.
Oh, good.
At this point, I'm just ripping up the old stuff, laying down a big thick layer of compost and planting. I'm not digging up my garden beds all the time.
Right. Oh, good.
And the other thing, my garden beds are very prone to ants. I get a lot of ant beds in my garden. And this particular technique has helped me to, shall we say, encourage the ants to live somewhere else.
Any idea why?
A little ant bait and a lot of water where the ants are, and then not digging them up and spreading them all over the neighborhood, but just continuing to compress them into a smaller and smaller space.
Okay.
With healthy soil.
Right.
Which
right.
isn't their favorite thing necessarily.
Right, that's true.
So it's kind of an interesting thing. I know that we all talk about organic and how things need to be organic, and that's true. I mean, we live in an organic world. We are organic. Organic's really important. But when it comes to fertilizer, we really need to rethink things a little bit.
Okay.
Both chemical and organic fertilizers tend to break down, because we're trying to produce nitrogen, into nitrogen in our environment. And while nitrogen is the largest component of the air we breathe, of the environment around us, that balance is pretty critical to overall environmental health. And the less nitrogen fertilizer that you apply to your garden, the least amount it takes to keep everything looking good and working well is where you should be.
It's kind of interesting, because nitrogen runoff is a huge problem.
Enormous problem.
I mean, it's huge. And nitrogen, the problem with nitrogen is it just doesn't stay in the soil. It just doesn't.
It becomes gaseous very quickly.
Right.
That little infinitesimal amount that goes into your plants is actually even released again by your plants. So while it's good for them, and they grow luscious leaves and all that, what we see is that it gets into the environment and it's beginning to degrade our environment in ways that we don't think are particularly healthy.
Right. And when you mention as far as luscious leaves, guess what also luscious leaves attract? And that's
Luscious insects.
Luscious insects. Insects love brand new luscious leaves.
They do. Just think about aphids. You know? They are out there going, oh boy, that looks good. Where are my ants to haul me around? It's true. Plants are better off with a little less what they used to call in Shakespearean days rank growth.
Yes.
And a whole lot better if they have mature leaves.
Right, right.
They're healthier, they're stronger, and in the long run, they'll be more beautiful.
Yes, definitely.
You know, we are meant to be attracted to that green, succulent moments of spring, because in the old days, we did not eat a lot of good green stuff in the winter. And I think our entire biology is designed to say, oh, I need to eat green things. Just like a cow.
Oh, interesting. I never thought about it that way.
but there comes a moment when you need to quit eating all the soft green things and get back to eating the beets and the,
right.
the tubers and
the other stuff.
The other stuff. And the darker greens. Like kale.
But we don't want to encourage the insects by continually giving them the luscious greens.
Exactly.
And it's not a normal thing to do.
No.
As you point out.
I don't think that's a natural natural sequence.
Right. But I hate to say it, Linda, we ran out of time. We're going to have to revisit this topic again.
We will.
So I sure thank you, and we'll see you next time.
Great. Thank
you. Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.